All right, if you want to head over to Exodus chapter 2, that would be absolutely wonderful. Exodus chapter 2, and we're making our way slowly through the second book of the Bible. And just a couple of updates. First of all, if you are interested in our missions trip this summer, we are going to be going to Guyana to go and figure out how they can stuff 25 people into a 15-passenger van. If you'd like to come and see how that works, let me know. But we're going to do so much more than that. We're going to be heading up a teen VBS, which I'm excited for. We're going to be canvassing around the neighborhoods. And I'm just excited to be a part of that. And so if you are interested in that, please let me know. We're going to try to have a meeting here very soon. And I know I talked to Robert Woodard, and he says, we have hit the ground running. And he says, you know, I just want to get into it. And then we're going to make a call and try to nail down some details. So I'd like to have some people ready to go so that we can nail down these details for the missions trip. So if you are interested, please let me know. I would love to get you involved in what we're doing. The other thing is, one of our missionaries that has been on deputation raising support has now reached 100%. The Dunlops that are going to France, they started out this year with 34%. And they are now at 100, or they started out last year, I guess 2022. And now at the end of 2022, they are at 100%. Isn't that crazy? That's awesome. That's the power of God on display for us to be able to see. And so they're going to be heading there soon, which is awesome to be able to see them getting into France and being involved in the ministry. And I'm excited about our missions conference coming up as well, which is just around the corner. Pretty soon you'll be seeing flags going down the sidewalks, and we've already got two families lined up, the Hernandez family, and then get this, the Taylors. I just love it. It's like that name just is always around all the time. I just love it. So I'm excited for what God's going to do this year, and all the power that he's going to show. And based on that, we're going to see here tonight the real hand of deliverance. Remember last week we talked about delivering the deliverer, and what we see is Moses being the deliverer of the Israelite people, but we saw that he had to be delivered first. And we saw that there were several ladies that was involved in making sure that he lived through his life, and even God using the Egyptian Pharaoh's daughter to be able to save Moses and to prepare him for what was to come. But yet, here we have a difficulty, a little bit of a bump in the road, and even throughout this bump, we're going to be able to see the real hand of deliverance in action. So as we get into Exodus chapter 2 and verses 11 through 25, I first want to see here how many years has transpired from going from Exodus, the beginning of Exodus 2 to the end of Exodus 2. And that we see actually by, I believe it's Stephen who was preaching and gives the fact that in Acts chapter 7 verses 23 through 24, it says, and when he was full 40 years, he's talking about Moses, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel, and seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. And so we're going to see that going on. So there's somewhere around 35, 36 years that has transpired, okay, depending on what age he was let go from his actual mother, who as he was weaned from her, to go to the Egyptian Pharaoh's daughter to be able to be trained up and to live in her household up until this point. This is quite a bit of years that's transpired. What happened since then? I mean, did he do well in his schoolwork? Like, what happened? I mean, did he get a 4.0 GPA in the Egyptian literature? What happened? Really, it's not stated, but yet he survived this long, and he's well enough within the Egyptian hierarchy to where he's still in existence. I mean, they could have killed him off knowing that he was a Hebrew, but yet God has sustained him throughout this time. Okay? So So as he's moving through this, there's one thing that as you continue to study Exodus, there is this matter of identity. Now, you probably heard that term a ton in our generation as far as identity. There's a lot of people confused about their identity, aren't there? Okay? And we won't get too much into that, but there is confusion about it. People searching for trying to find out who they are. Guess what? Moses is trying to figure that as well. He's not trying to figure out gender identity, but he's trying to figure out who he is as a person. And talking about missionaries, the best illustration that I could have come up with this and trying to understand where Moses is at is if you were a missionary kid. Now, do we have any missionary kids in here tonight? Okay. All right. None, but we do have a missionary or a former missionary kid that is a part of our church. And you know, one of the things as you talk to them, as they have either started growing up in America and as they've transitioned to another field, they have a struggle. And that struggle is the fact that they are American, but they're trying to be whatever they are in whatever country that they're a part of. So if they're ministering in Japan, they're trying to be Japanese, okay? They're trying to mix into the culture, and they feel absolutely lost. Well, the Americans, they really don't accept me because when I go back, I do weird things. I do Japanese culture. I do Kenyan culture. I do all these other cultures, and I don't really relate to them as much as if I actually grew up within their culture, but yet when you go to whatever country you're in, then you feel a little bit lost there. So, well, they know that I'm American. And when I try to do what they do, it doesn't always quite fit. And so I feel lost. I've talked to missionary kids. That's what they've expressed. I've roomed with a missionary kid for 2.5 months, and that's exactly what he expressed. And after he came back to America, he still struggled. He was longing to come back to America, and when he did, he still felt lost. Okay, here we have Moses, a Hebrew, who he does know where he came from. You'll see that tonight as we jump into verse number 11. But you also know that there's some struggles. Will he even be accepted by the Hebrews? Will he be accepted by the Egyptians? We find out that he actually gets cast out, and then he ends up in a totally different area for quite a few years, trying to mix with another family. They're just, identity is in crisis mode. But we also are trying to figure out, where is Israel in their own identity? Who do they identify with? And as we move through Exodus, you'll see as God lays it out how he wants them to identify with him. And as what feels like chaos, when it feels like there's crisis mode, when it feels like I'm a little bit lost in this area, can I find my identity in him when all of the other identities in this world don't seem like they fit? As we move through Exodus, you'll see more of what's happening in this situation. But here we, at the end of tonight, you'll find Moses, a stranger, in a strange land. But you know, amongst all of this, you'll see God's development of a character trait within Moses. Compassion. Do you know someone who often just shows compassion? They're constantly reaching out to you. They're constantly lending a helping hand. Sometimes they don't know how to lend the helping hand, but they're doing it anyway because God has instilled with them, God is developing within them a character trait that is representative of him, and that is compassion itself. Even as Pastor stated tonight, what did God do? He sent his son. Despite the fact that we were total enemies of him, God commendeth his love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And we're going to see that tonight and how Moses is trying to play that out. But you know what? He doesn't always get it right. And despite the fact that he doesn't get it right, I'm just going to give you the point right now. God is behind the scenes working in a mighty way to make his plan work. Let's jump into the first point here, and that is the deliverer. And yes, I put that in quotation marks. This is what we're talking about, Moses. He's in practice, okay? The deliverer in practice, all right? Has anybody ever practiced for anything? You ever mess up in practice? You ever mess up bad? What's practice there for? To learn, to figure things out, to hopefully get it right the next time. Okay, this is what he is in practice for. And so as we jump into verse number 11, we're going to cover verses 11 through 15 here, and we'll walk through this. Verse 11, and it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren. Who's his brethren? He recognizes that the Hebrews are his brethren. And he looked on their burdens. What was the burden? They've been enslaved by the Egyptians. And he spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way. And when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. That seems like that is the perfect opportunity to practice compassion right here, right? Is this how we do it? Is this how we show compassion? And yet, this he saw a need, and he jumped to it. He was a little rash, and due to his rashness, he applied his compassion in the wrong fashion. He looked, this is what tells you, he knew he shouldn't have done it this way. He looked this way, and he looked that way. When do we usually do that? When we messed up? Or about to mess up. Have you ever, since we're in the cold season, have you ever slipped on ice? Yeah, isn't that wonderful? Isn't it awesome? Okay, I love watching people in videos that I don't know slip on ice because it makes it feel like there's nothing wrong there, right? Okay, and you know what we do when we slip up, when we fall? What do? We look around to see if anybody saw us fall. Oh, I don't want to be embarrassed, okay? It's like I've shared this with you before. You remember Ethan Peden, okay? Me and him hung out all the time. I would ride from Wanaco on my bike to go and hang out with him, and we would always ride around town thinking that we were macho and cool. And one day we were at a gas station, I believe it was over at Circle K, and we decided to just keep going around in circles, and we just kept getting closer and closer. I guess we thought that we were those dirt bike guys in the ball, you know? And we just kept getting closer and closer, and all of a sudden, guess what? The closer you get, all of a sudden, boom, and we laid out. We laid out. You know what the first thing that I thought? You know what the first thing that I did? It wasn't, "Ow, that hurt. Are you okay?" No, it was like, "Did anybody see that? Man, we are idiots. Why are we doing this?" And I looked up, and I didn't see anybody around, but you know what I saw? A camera. And I'm thinking in my head, somebody's watching this and laughing hysterically. And I'm going to end up on America's Funniest Home Videos, and I won't even get the money for it because somebody else is going to turn it in. That's as bad as it is. But when we mess up or when we're about to mess up, we look to make sure nobody's watching. And that's exactly what he did. And he went in and he killed the man. Now get this. This is the first act of Moses trying to deliver his people. But with his own power, with his own wisdom, with his own timing, with his own method. And in this first act, we will see him fail miserably. He forgot to plug in. What do you mean by plugging in? Plugging into God. Because instead of using his own power, his own wisdom, his own timing, and his own method, he should have plugged into God and asked for God's power, God's wisdom, God's timing, and God's method. So that's where he's at. But as we go on in this passage, we see in verse number 13, when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together and said to them, him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killedst the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Verse 15, now when Pharaoh heard this saying, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So here we find a transition that's going to be happening, but what happened? So he did, and he protected, he showed compassion upon the Hebrew, but he did not upon the Egyptian, and he killed the Egyptian, tried to hide it, but you know what often happens when we try to hide our sin? It shows up. It always comes back to bite us. It's somewhere or another. It could be open. It could be in front of people. But it also, you know what? It could also be just in a constant memory of the things that we have done. It always comes back. And this is what he struggled with. He thought that no one was around. But the next day, he goes out. He was trying to identify with his people and help his people. He overcame his identity with any Egyptians. He separated from that to be with his people. The next day he goes out, he finds two Hebrews fighting. And in the midst of this fight, he goes in and says, hey, why are you fighting against each other? And they say, who made you ruler over us? Have you ever said that? Who made you boss? Oh, wait a minute. Let's say that again. Who died and made you boss, right? Have you heard that one before? And that's exactly what they say. So when he's tried to identify with the Hebrews, they're backing up and saying, wait a minute, I don't want anything to do with you. You have no authority over me. Who made you an authority? And they say, what, are you just going to kill us too? Oh. Be sure your sin will find you out. It always comes back to bite. And yet while he tried to identify with his own people, they separated. And in the midst of his sin, the Pharaoh found out and now wants to kill Moses. And Moses, even in all that he's done already, he runs away. So what happens in all of this? Here's a few things that you need to understand. Listen, he might have had the right heart, but he had the wrong method. Moses reacted with a permanent solution for a temporary issue. Do you remember Cain and Abel? He got upset because his sacrifice was not accepted by God. Guess what he could have done? He could have just found a temporary... he could have gone and just done what God wanted him to do, but yet... he went and he killed his brother. A permanent solution that was faulty to try to fix what was a temporary problem. See, we need to be able to be reasonable in understanding what can we do to fix this. Killing him was not the option. Right heart, but wrong method in the sense of Moses. Moses reacted with a permanent solution for a temporary issue. But again, make sure your sin will find you out. Teenagers, no matter how dark it is outside, no matter how many people are asleep in the home, make sure your sin will find you out. Dads, no matter how many people are asleep at home and no matter how dark it is outside, make sure your sin will find you out. In fact, everyone. If you're looking this way and back to this way, trying to see if anybody's watching. Don't do it. Even if it's a good thing, if you're looking around to see who's watching, you do a good thing. Don't do it. Because where should that glory go? God. Not to me. If we have to look one way and the other, that should be a cancel out of decision that I'm trying to make. You know, lack of discernment and choices causes fear for those around you, because he wasn't discerning, and then these Hebrews decided, hey, I don't know if I can trust this guy. This guy makes some pretty rash decisions. Remember that as you make choices. And you know, also running away might have temporarily fixed his situation, but it didn't help his people. It didn't help his people. Running away from an issue doesn't fix the problem. In fact, sometimes it can get bigger. And so this is something that we need to keep as an understanding of. Just because I turn my back to it doesn't mean that it's gone. Just even if I try to close my eyes, doesn't make it disappear. If it's an issue, it needs to be taken care of. So as we jump through this, we understand, hey, listen, if you're reading this for the first time, the struggle would be that knowing that this could be the guy that could rise up within Egyptian ranks to be able to save his own people, to maybe affect politics, to maybe affect the highest one in command and be able to save his people, all of a sudden we start thinking, man, the hope is now hopeless. Because this guy really messed up. And we start to give up. But is the hope of Israel wasted? No. We see more practice here starting in verse number 16. It says, now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters. Remember, he's gone to this different land, and he's sitting by a well. And here we see a priest of Midian had 7 daughters. And they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Did you see Moses killing any shepherds? Nope. What we do see is a compassionate Moses stepping in to help these women that need help. And he not only stops there, but he goes and he helps them even further by watering the flock. And verse 18, and when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that ye are come so soon today? So he was expecting this time frame where he wouldn't have to deal with his daughters. Maybe he was having his quiet time. And then all of a sudden, started hearing that talking. It's like the Sherberts right now. All of a sudden, you know, pray for them. They're on their honeymoon again, okay? All the kids are gone. And they're like, whoa, it's quiet. The house is staying clean. It's amazing, right? And maybe he was just taking it in. And all of a sudden he started hearing his 7 daughters talking, coming in. Why are they here so early? So this is the question that he asked. How'd you get here so fast? In verse 19, and they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds. Did you get that? An Egyptian. Remember the man who's struggling with his identity, who looks like a Hebrew, and the Egyptian sees him as a Hebrew, and the Hebrew sees him as a Hebrew, but yet these other people see him as an Egyptian. Still messed up. This Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. In verse 20, and he said unto his daughters, and where is he? Why is it that ye have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. Let's reward him. Verse 21, and Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. And so even being lost in a different land, and you'll even see this as we jump into verse number 22, it says, and she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. See, here is it is Moses is struggling, being away. I mean, he's a stranger in a strange land, and he is finding a little bit of identity with this other family, but it's a totally different family here. And he's making mention of this, but yet he has been rewarded with being able to have a family after he has used a right heart with the right method to be able to defend these ladies and to help them with the flock. And he also used the temporary solution for a temporary problem. He is starting to learn how to have compassion, how to practice this. He's getting better at it because God will use him at some point. We see him growing. But you know what? What happens when we make mistakes, when we make bad choices? Does God smite us down and we're just gone after one bad choice? I can think of it this way. I like to use my children at this point. I can. When they become teenagers, I won't be able to, right? My son likes to play soccer. Okay? And he practices when practice is going on, but you know, they really don't get very serious about soccer at his age. They really just don't, okay? And in fact, it's quite funny, it's quite entertaining to watch five-year-olds play soccer, because if they want that ball, they will bend down and pick it up, and then they'll run, okay? But you know what? When they're out on the field, they make a lot of mistakes. And that's okay. But you know, I'm the kind of dad, okay? I don't just, you know, get on my phone and scroll through Facebook because I think it's boring and Facebook is more entertaining than watching my son play ball. I'm standing over by the goalpost whenever my son is in the goal box, okay? When he's goalie, I'm over there. And I'm standing there. And I'm watching for the ball more than my son is, right? And especially when it gets cold. You know what kids do when it gets cold? And they're in shorts and a hoodie, okay? They stick their arms in their hoodie, and then they just kind of jump around like this, and then they kind of turn around, and they just keep messing around. And I'm the dad that stands there and says, hey, get your arms out of your coat. Come on, let's go. That ball is coming down the field, okay? That five-year-old is coming fast. Even though they're probably going to turn around in 3 seconds, okay? Because they start going the opposite direction because they forget which way that they're going. And I'm there, and I'm trying to direct and trying to help him. And, you know, sometimes those kids, they get up, and they're trying to play soccer. They start hanging on the net when they're trying to block these balls. And, you know, sometimes they're standing inside the goal box, okay? You know what? When that ball crosses that line, that is a goal. Do not do that, child. Get out of the box, okay? Get out of the goal. You got to stand outside of there, and you need to watch when that ball is coming at you, and you better get down there in the dirt. You better get dirty. If I'm going to sacrifice my Saturday morning, you will get dirty. Have you ever been there? And when that ball comes, get it, get it, get it. And I might be annoying to the other side, but I don't care because I am trying to help my son understand how to play the game. And when that ball is going around and it's like a ping pong match inside, right 3 feet within the goal, and I'm just like, get your hands on it! Get your hands on it! I get really intense. I don't know if my blood pressure goes way up or what happens, but you know, I get a little red in the face. I'm not mean. I'm just excited and passionate. And I'm telling them, get your hands on it. Why? Because you know, when a kid hasn't been in it for very long, they just don't know what to do. And they want to try to do it. So when they're not goalie, they try to put their hands on it. But when they're goalie, they just try to run around and pick flowers. And they're confused on how to do things. And they don't know how to use the right methods. And they make bad decisions. And you know, I didn't ever, whenever my son made bad decisions, I didn't ever grab him by the collar, pull him out of the game, put him in the vehicle, and then run away. You're upset, get back in the game. You make a bad decision, get back in the game. This is how we're doing it. This is how we're teaching you how to do it. This is how I think of God in this instance. Where Moses is getting in, he uses the wrong method to show his compassion. It's rash. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. But God is still there, working behind the scenes. There's direction. There's guidance. God's still there. And even as we see it, we see the true deliverer still in motion in these last few verses. You see what happens? It says in verse 23, even when Moses is a really big distance away from his people, what's God doing? And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Oh, goody. Finally, the Israelite people will be okay. Everything will be good again. No. The children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And they cried, and their cry came up to God by the reason of their bondage. In verse 24, and God heard their groaning. And God remembered his covenant with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. See, God is still there, even when his people mess up. God is still there. He's still making things happen. He's still guiding. And when we see him in the future chapters, we'll see as he comes and he's talking to Moses, and Moses is making a lot of stupid excuses. He's still there guiding and directing and providing because he's God. He's in control. He knows who we are. He knows that we make bad decisions. And yet still in his long-suffering and his patience, he's still there helping us along the way. He's still in action. We need to remember that. Kids, have you sinned before? Yep. Can God still use you? Yes. Will you sin again? Yeah. Will you do it wrong? Yeah. God's still there. Teenagers, have you messed up? Mm-hmm. Can God still use you? Yeah. Can God still train you? Can God still bring you up? Yes, he can. And he can use you in a mighty way. And even though we misapply, and even though we misunderstand timing, and we misunderstand methods, and we misunderstand and try to do it in our own power and our own wisdom, yet God is still there, and we can plug into him, and he can use us in a mighty way to do his plans. We just need to submit to that. Teenagers, stay in. Don't give up. You're still moldable. You're still usable. God can use you. Adults, and I don't care if you're 18 or if you're 99 and a half. Have you messed up? Yeah. Have we tried to do it in our own power and our own wisdom and our own methods and our own timing? Yep. Can God still use you? Yeah. So let's get back in. Have you tried to sideline yourself lately? Because don't we often do that? It's not necessarily other people that sideline us. It's ourselves that sideline us. Oh, I didn't do it right. I messed up. I came up short. If I did it wrong this long, I'll probably do it wrong till the day Jesus comes back. Wait, hold on. Who's bigger than you? Who's in control? Who's got this? Have you plugged in? I used this a couple weeks ago to say, God, Put me in. Put me in, coach. Put me back to work. I've sidelined myself long enough. I'm tired of sitting on the bench. God, use me. We're going to see what God does with Moses as we keep moving through here. I like this verse, Hebrews 11, 24, and 25. What do we see here? By faith, because that's going to take a lot of faith for Moses to overcome identity, to overcome fear, to overcome himself. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Can we be described like that? Letting go of what could be easy, to do what God's called us to do. God, put me back in. Put me in, coach. Let's do this. I don't want to be on the sidelines anymore. God, you've got this. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much. We thank you so much for how we see an individual who's messed up, and yet you still use them, who's learned, who's learned, and yet he's still going to make some bad choices. But God, it's amazing how much you can do with faulty people. And that's just because of the fact that the true hand of deliverance, the true one behind it all, the true power, the true wisdom, the truth itself... is all based on you, God. Help us to grasp onto that, to plug in. To not sideline ourselves because of past choices, but to get back in. Start using what you've given us. Start depending on you, start submitting to you and to what your will is and to do what you want us to do. God, help us. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's just take a few moments and pray.